Graduation is a sweet occasion, but finding the perfect gift can be a bitter struggle. MMS.com has a solution. Personalized M&Ms. Just imagine the look on your grad's face when they receive a custom candy creation featuring their school's colors, name, and even their photo printed right on some M&Ms. It's a thoughtful way to celebrate their accomplishments and make the occasion even more special. Visit MMS.com to create your own personalized gifts and party favors for graduations, weddings, birthdays, and more. That's MMS.com. Use code WONDERY to receive 15% off your next order.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 983. I have some stand-up dates, and they're currently not all posted in one location yet. I know, it's irresponsible. Especially for someone who is as organized as I am, this is not acceptable at all, this kind of disorganization. So anyway, it's the Brea Improv, the American Comedy Company in San Diego, Helium in Portland, Stand Up Live in Phoenix, Levity Live in Oxnard, Zanies in Nashville, and Wise Guys in Salt Lake City. These dates are through the end of February through June. So if any of those sound familiar to you, like they might be in your area, then go to the respective websites and get TX. Also, stick around after the podcast for an ending word salad. Ending word salad after this podcast. But now let's talk about you, the ID10T community, who have sent emails to events@ID10T.com so that I might mention the thing you're making, like Matt, who writes, I play in a Philadelphia-based power pop band called Cassettes. We're releasing, or just released, depending on when you read this, our debut LP on January 25th. Ah, it is released! It is released into the world. Wild Heart is our love letter to the FM era, a time when every song could be single, every line could be the chorus, and every guitar solo was an octave higher than the last. Wild Heart is available on all digital and streaming services, and after a successful Kickstarter campaign, can be purchased on limited edition colored vinyl at cassettesforever.com. We hope you love it as much as we do. Cassette. You know, someday someone's going to explain to me, like, I get why vinyl had a resurgence. I do. But it seems like lately there's been a cassette, like the actual cassette tape resurgence. And I don't know. They warp and degrade, I think, a lot faster and easier than vinyl. Am I wrong about that? I'm not, like, an audiophile nerd, so maybe I'm wrong about that. But the cassette and cassingle craze seemed a little strange to me. But maybe I'm missing something. That has nothing to do with Matt, who is in Cassettes, the band, which never warps and never goes wrong. Congratulations to Matt for keeping the FM era alive. Dan writes, I'm a graduate fine artist currently working two jobs to help support my awesome family and have made the time to venture forth into the world of children's books. I currently have two titles available exclusively on the Amazon Kindle. 6-year-old Sydney, the skateboarding boy, featuring an authorized guest appearance by professional skater Mike V, and Shoes for Bigfoot, a really fun tale about Bigfoot's quest for quality footwear. Just search these titles on Amazon and they should come up. Thanks for your support, and hopefully these are my first intrepid steps into an insanely competitive market. There you go. So Mark and Dan have written to events@idtinty.com. When will you make a thing that will do that? This episode is Mr. Jim Gaffigan, who is, you know, just one of the best comedians of all time, is all. This might be his fourth time on. Not 100% sure. Jim was on real early in the run of the podcast. Really, really early. Man, definitely within the first year, maybe in the first 6 or 7 months. And it's always a pleasure to sit down and talk with him. We recorded this when I was in New York in November a couple months ago. So if any of the references seem dated, you know, we record a lot of podcasts at the same time, and some of them are a little more time sensitive than others. Jim is always touring, so just get his dates at jimgaffigan.com. And I also want to give a shout out to the recording facility that we recorded this at, a really great studio in New York called Mirror Tone, Mirror Tone Studios. They're, if you're recording a podcast in New York or you need some recording facilities, go to mirrortone.com. I worked with a guy named Roman there who was super nice, and it was a really, really great facility, and we had a good time there. So thanks to Jim Gaffigan for coming back on the podcast, and thanks to Mirrortone Studios for providing the recording facility to facilitate such an endeavor, such a Gaffigan-esque endeavor. I want to thank for sponsoring this episode of the ID10T podcast, Robinhood. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade. Robinhood doesn't charge any commission fees, so you can trade stocks and keep all of your profits. Plus, there is no account minimum deposit needed to get started, so you can start investing at any level. The simple, intuitive design of Robinhood makes investing easy for newcomers and experts alike. View easy-to-understand charts and market data and place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. You can also view stock collections, such as 100 most popular. With Robinhood, you can learn how to invest in the market as you build your portfolio, discover new stocks, track your favorite companies, and get custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving listeners of ID10T a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help build your portfolio. Sign up at id10t.robinhood.com. Also sponsoring this episode of the podcast, Squarespace. Head over to squarespace.com/ID10T for a free trial. When you're ready to launch, use the offer code ID10T to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Any idea that you have, you can turn into a website, create some digital presence that is not just social media, which is probably crushing you with algorithms as we speak. Your work is getting, the stuff you're posting on social media is not being seen by as many people as you hope. But you can just make a place online where people can go, and you can showcase all of your work, not just little micro blurbs of it. You can publish content, sell products or services of all kinds, promote your physical or online business, or announce an upcoming event or a special project, or even more. The templates are amazing. There's powerful e-commerce functionality. Everything is optimized for mobile right out of the digital box. It's a new way to buy domains and choose from over 200 extensions included as well. Analytics are going to help you grow in real time, and there's 24/7 award-winning customer support. So make it. Make your thing. Make it yourself. Make it stand out. Make it. Period. Make it. If you want to start your new business, do all these things. Think it, dream it with Squarespace. Destiny is calling. Will you take the call? Squarespace.com/ID10T for a free trial. When you're ready to launch, save 10% off your first purchase again using the offer code ID10T. All right. Thanks to Squarespace for sponsoring this episode of the ID10T podcast. Here's Jim Gaffigan, episode 983, coming at your face via your ears.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
Here comes Jim Gaffigan, walking into a recording facility. Jim Gaffigan standing at the table.
Oh, here we go.
The jacket's coming off.
This is, I was tempted to text. I'm like, this isn't a visual one.
No.
Good.
Very much not a visual one. I know a lot of people do, like, they've added a video component to the podcast, but I just feel like video creates a whole other layer.
Yeah.
That is, you know, not everyone really wants to go to a thing and be like, what? I'm going to be on camera, you know? It's better to talk.
It's interesting how Like, I'm doing this, planning this benefit for my university, and they're like, and I got Mulaney and Birbiglia to do it, and they, because they went to the same school, and I, and they're like asking things. They're like, "Hey, can we record it and sell it?" And I'm like, "No." But like, and they would know,
right? No, because I think they think that you know, doing a stand-up set's just like writing a paper. You write, you can just write another one. Like, yeah. That digs a long time.
Takes a long time.
Yeah, which is the same thing when people, like, record at shows and they post them, like, "Oh, I'm helping you." You're like, "Yeah, but then that bit's going to be out there and then it's going to be..."
Then it's not new.
Exactly. It's actually, "Thank you, I know your intention is good, but it's actually not that helpful." Has it ever actually helped, though? Have you been in a situation where someone posted a clip and it, like, blew something up in a way and you're like, "You know what? I'm glad they posted that."
I don't know. I mean, I think it's strange, the material, how there's an unspoken agreement with people that come to your show that they get new material. Mm-hmm. I mean, that being said, there's also a certain minority that would probably just want old material.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Which is why, you know, I typically do an encore where I'll do some old stuff.
Do people call it out, or do you sort of pick?
Yeah, sometimes people do call it out.
And then are there bits where you're like, do you have to stop and go, "Okay, I'll do that again"?
No, I'll do, like, you know, some, you know, like something kind of like when people come to a show, kind of like the encore is to clean it up, meaning like I want everyone leaving there going, "That was..." Because I don't think it's about money. I think it's about time. That was worth my night.
Right.
And so
to put on pants and go park,
yes,
and wait in line.
So that's what I want people to leave and go, "That was worth my Thursday night," or "That was worth these 3 hours on Saturday."
We have the same manager, and Alex, yes, and I talk about this all the time, just about how, like, when a comic tries to become an arena comic, he's like, it's real dangerous because the experience of going to an arena,
yeah,
to see a comedian, it might feel good to the comedian to fill an arena,
yeah,
but wouldn't you rather, like, do a show, like, just add shows in a more manageable venue so that the experience for the fan is better, rather than being in, like, section double H?
It's weird because in some larger venues, some arenas, I mean, yes, that's totally true. But in some larger venues, the technology has advanced so much, but people are still watching a screen. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So they can see you there, but they're also seeing a screen. And so there is something. And it's also, some of it is the time getting into an arena as opposed to getting into a theater. Because, like, in a,
right,
theater, you can park across the street. In an arena, you kind of have to...
You got to remember what... You have to park in a section.
Right.
You might have to take a shuttle.
But then again, you know, like, I also... I think that some arena shows, there is a certain energy. And if the technology is right... Like, I've done Salt Lake City. I've done the basketball arena there. And it's pretty amazing. It's pretty... some of it is... The architecture is, it's not perfect for a comedy show, but it's, you know, not to get too nerdy about it, but like a basketball arena versus a hockey arena.
Right.
Or even Madison Square Garden. They're very different. Like a basketball, you know, that one in Utah is designed for the Jazz. So it's pretty set up for a small kind of intimate feel.
Because everyone's aimed at the middle?
Yes. Got they're it. All aimed. Whereas in a hockey arena or even like indoor soccer, they got to spread it out.
Right. And then you have to perform on the ice, which is the other,
yes,
part of it. You just got to stay up on the ice somehow and do jokes the whole time.
It's very strange.
It's not a bad idea. Has anyone ever done stand up on ice before?
Stand up on ice. I think Disney should look into it. It's absurd that, like, I mean, I went to Frozen on Ice, which doesn't seem that big of a leap, but it's just the on ice kind of, it works because people just want to see stuff on ice. But why do we want to see stuff on ice?
Because then there's a whole other level of
difficulty.
Of difficulty involved with it. That it's like, it's hard enough to dance and do these songs and memorize lines and act them out. Now... The next time it would be like...
You need to defend a hockey goal.
On ice, holding a bunch of bowling balls. Like, it's like how many levels of difficulty do we have to add to things?
And they're you know, like, they there's characters that are, like, in, you know, get-ups. They're like, it's not easy to ice skate when you're dressed like the snowman from Frozen. You know what I mean? It's just, why do we need... Because little kids love it, right?
I just need to see you do a joke about whales and then do a triple axel.
Right?
So just kind of like...
Just skating around.
I honestly never thought about... I guess I hadn't really thought too much about, like, what is our fascination with that? Yeah, but it works because they do them.
It works. It works. And if you've got young children, they dig it.
It's basically just cold theater. It's just really cold theater.
And by the way, it's in a huge arena.
Yeah.
So you don't really get to see Elsa. You get to see the dress she's wearing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, is Elsa... Oh, I guess Elsa's a person, but then the... But then all the characters are just like big character suits.
Yeah,
but with
and there's
little
also,
skates sticking out
and
of the bottom.
There's special effects. Like, you know, like there's, you know, like there's this ice castle that they bring out. I can't believe this was a million years ago.
By the way, the on ice thing feels like, if you haven't done a bit about it, it feels like there's a good 12 to 15 minutes of Gaffigan magic to
talk
about.
Yes, there's definitely, there's ice as a top, like, ice sculptures are very impractical too, right?
Yes.
It's insane.
And temporary. We know that they're temporary.
There's also, like, I know you and your wife travel and do kind of, interesting things. But, like, have you ever stayed at an ice hotel?
We've talked about staying in an ice hotel. Like staying in an igloo.
What do you need? Why do you need that? Is that on a bucket list? Is that on anyone's original bucket list?
I guess it's just, like, how many, you know, like, yes, we've stayed in a lot of solid material, like, permanent materials. But we've never stayed in a temporary material hotel at the same time.
It's, like, what is it? What is the man or whatever, smoking man or standing man? What is
it? What are you talking about?
They do it in like...
Burning Man.
Burning Man.
Standing Man.
What is it? Standing Man.
When you get
burning
really...
Man.
You just stand around.
I am my father. Is it Standing Man those hippies
go to? No, Dad, it's Burning Man. God.
But that's all temporary, right? You go there and they just build something.
Yeah,
it's like, how bored are rich people?
You know...
You know what I mean? It's like, can we do something where it's like in the desert and like there's a huge thing that looks like...
And you know the desert's just super annoyed. It's like, how uninviting do I need to be? Like, what more keep off the lawn sign did you need than that there's not a lawn? Like,
right.
Stay the fuck out of me. And they're like, nope,
right.
we're gonna build a fucking transformer made out of bamboo and roll
yes.
it across your floor.
And I think they do it right, where, like, they don't, like, there's nothing, they leave the area of land the way they found it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they're that rich. So, they're rich people with... a social conscience.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. They are trampling on the environment, but also leaving it the way that they found it.
It's interesting, that whole artistic exploration of Burning Man, because it's easy for us to sit there and go, it's absurd.
Right.
But there's also something admirable about people seeking creative and spiritual fulfillment, but there is, at the same time, I sit there and go, you know, most of my hometown, they couldn't afford to go to Burning, like there's not like, well, should I go and see a movie and go to Godfather's Pizza or go to Burning Man? Like,
there's no... And it's funny because apparently it is a transformative experience if you
yes.
go. It's very communal and it's, you
yes.
know, it's very, you know, but then at the same time, like... I don't know. Like, I'm 46. I want to shit in a toilet. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
I don't know. So I guess I haven't. But you had me thinking. I was thinking about the ice sculpture thing, and I never thought about this. Were there great ice sculpturists that people just don't remember because all their work melted? It's just like one guy who's like, oh, Michelangelo's not so great. You know?
No, like, there was no photographs, right? There was. It's just. How do you even. I mean, I guess it's kind of like pumpkin carving, right? There's a whole subset of creative people that do temporary designs. Like, it's the same people that do the butter sculptures at state fairs, I guess.
That's right. Well, right? Now we have Instagram, so now those things can actually...
Now those things can live for an hour.
They're not...
as we swipe by them and go, huh, okay.
Well, at least with ice sculptures, like... There aren't people elbowing out of the way to scoop it out like in a butter sculpture where people – it's like the second you set it down, people are not appreciating it at all. They're just like shoveling butter into their mouth.
I love butter. What a beautiful thing.
How's your cholesterol?
I don't know. It's not good.
You never check.
No, it's – I went to the doctor, I don't know, a year ago, and she's brilliant and she actually cares. It's weird to like deal with someone who actually cares.
Yeah.
And – And so my cholesterol is not great. I mean, you're looking at me like, how's your cholesterol? Because I look like I have bad cholesterol.
I have high cholesterol.
You do?
I do. So
some of that's genetic. Because you eat healthy. You don't eat meat, do you?
I do eat meat, yeah. But I'm not. But my diet's not terrible. But I think it's either stress-related or...
Oh, yeah.
I'm asking because I'm just trying to figure out, like, what are other people doing? I just don't want to have to go on the pills, the statins that you have to take to lower cholesterol. So I'm just trying to find...
You know, I also, I don't, you know, maybe I should go on that stuff, but some of it is, I don't know, that's the kind of piece of enjoyment. Like when I tour doing shows, it's like I reward myself to going to a steakhouse or whatever's open at that time, and I have the meal, which is not ideal. Now, I don't sit there and have the worst of the worst, but it's not, you know, you go out to dinner and you're eating a stick of butter.
Yes.
You just know that. You're like, why is this so much better? It's because they make it with primarily butter and salt.
Because we like those things taste good to us.
Yeah. But if we were home, we wouldn't do that.
No, but I do – I question, though, why onions get added to everything. Like, are you an onion person?
I like onions.
Onions really upset my stomach.
Really?
And so when you read a menu and it says, like, oh, okay, yeah, this sandwich has, you know, lettuce and tomato and cheese, and you get it, and there's a bunch of onions, you're like, this was not part of the agreement.
Not mentioned.
Why are we so fascinated with onions as a culture?
I think it's just a flavor. It's a flavor bang. It's a flavor bang.
I don't want to be flavor banged.
But I don't like the sautéed onions. That's just like it feels like you're eating strings of flesh.
Yeah.
It's like, ugh.
Who are you trying to impress?
Yeah.
But like don't make butter something that it's not. I mean, don't make onions something that it isn't.
No, it's not. It's not. I also, you know, it's weird cuz I think I do enjoy eating and like, you know, my family and I did shows in Australia. And we did some shows, and then we were at, like, this place near the Great Barrier Reef, and they had this amazing – it was a culinary experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it just – it was kind of wasted on me. You know what I mean? I'm like, in the end, I just want food that tastes – I'm not bored with good-tasting food. People are like, you know what? Well, what if we add some hair in there?
The culinary thing – sometimes I feel like – people make food more complicated than it needs to be. Like, we're staying in a really, like, a nice hotel, and we came home from this event that we went to the other night, and I was like, oh, my God, I don't know why. I just want some vanilla ice cream.
Yeah.
What hotel does not have vanilla ice cream? Right. No, they had, like, pine nut, pomegranate, something or other. Like, you don't have to swing for the fences on everyone. Just have one.
No, there's an ice cream store near where I live that I brought my children to, and they didn't have anything close to normal ice cream. It was like, you know, hot sauce ice cream, you know, like...
Rhubarb waffle cake.
Rhubarb, you know, like coleslaw flavored ice cream. You don't need that. I understand some people are like, if you're eating ice cream that much or you're smoking that much weed, you're like, you know, maybe some coleslaw ice cream. But, you know, I talk about this stuff, you know, in these CBS Sunday commentaries and people just freak out. Like, I'll just have this simple kind of mundane commentary on horse racing or on craft beer, and I, you know, it's kind of humorous. It's, you know, like I write them in an hour,
right?
And I'll post it, and it's just me kind of like, I like beer that tastes like beer, and just my my Twitter and Instagram feed and Facebook just filled with just this outrage. How dare you endanger our livelihood? And I'm like,
oh, wow.
Yeah. No, it's like...
Like you woke up and you're like, you know who I'm going to take down today? The craft beer guys.
Yeah, I always kind of have this this feeling that, like, if you're offended by my comedy, you've got other issues. Do you know what I mean? That's not to say that I don't look back on some material with some regret, but I'm not, you know, I try and steer away from us and them.
Right.
You know what I mean? And we live in such an us and them era that I'm even more sensitive of that.
I know, but that's the magic of your comedy. There's this really rare animal that can perform in pretty much any kind of room. I've seen you do alternative rooms, you know, with 30 people, and you can do arenas, you can do big theaters, you can do football stadiums, and, you know, the quality of your jokes too, and you're clean, and it's funny as shit. And Nikki Glaser was here before, and we were talking about how you're someone who just explores every angle of a topic.
Oh, thanks.
And and that's really hard to do. But it's also, it's not offensive. It's like it's edgy in the sense that it's not offensive to anyone, it's still really funny.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, no, it's weird, because I mean, I definitely had I remember I did I've been doing stand-up 30 years, and I remember there was, like, back when you'd, like, have VHSs of something, I gave it to a friend who I knew kind of through another friend, and he goes, and I had all this material on models, and he goes, I don't know what to tell you, it's mean, you're mean to models, and I was like, but they're models, and he goes, you're being mean to them, and that kind of stayed with me. I'm like, yeah, you know what, it's like, it's an easy target.
Right.
And believe me, I do hate good-looking people. But no, but it's an easy target. They are models. You know what I mean? It's just bringing dark instead of light.
But that's what's so funny is that you pick a lot of inanimate objects,
yes,
or animals or things,
yes,
and still people find a way to get mad at them.
They get furious. This beer commentary was so... So, I mean, I was working on a movie in Knoxville. You're from Tennessee, right?
I'm from Tennessee.
And so, like, I went out with everyone from the movie. It was like a small indie where we're literally, no one's getting paid. So we're sitting at a bar, and it was a cool bar in Knoxville. And they were like, what kind of beer do you want? And I was like, all right, maybe I'll have one, but just something simple, like a Yingling or something like that. And they're like, we don't have Yingling. It's a cool bar. So
yeah,
they're like, we have, and I remember them, they're like, it has kind of like a beer with a Jolly Rancher kick to it. And I remember thinking, no. Yeah. it's like if I'm going to have one beer this week, it's not going to have
it's
a Jolly Rancher.
Candy beer.
And so, like, I was talking with the crew and we were laughing about it. And then it just prompted this essay and just, you know, beer manufacturers of America, Paste Magazine. Because there is, you know, people, we live in an age of outrage. And it's so interesting to see people, like, I don't begrudge, or I'm not surprised by somebody who's like, you know, who's, you know, maybe, you know, just sitting there and kind of looking for a fight. But I'm talking about like logical, sensible people that are caught up in unnecessary anger. I'm not saying I'm far from perfect. I get angry about shit that's not important. But like, there was an article in Paste Magazine. About my craft beer thing. And I was sitting there going, have you lost your mind?
Well, because part of it is the things that people are into and now, they attach to their identity. They just like, open up the compartment for their core belief system or their ego.
Yeah.
And they just insert that thing and then close and then weld the door shut. And so any attack on that thing is like, they take like, how the fuck, why is he trying to murder me? And it's like, and it's the same kind of reaction that I would imagine when early humans were out in the savannah and someone tried to knock something out of your hand and steal your stuff.
Yes.
You know, it's like a survival thing. But we don't live that way anymore. It's okay to sort of laugh and go, you know, like it's not, you don't have to, Like, that's your commentary on craft beer isn't a personal attack on someone's livelihood. It's
not
just
at
like
all.
Oh, I'm an outsider to this, and this is my sort of silly take on it.
And I also, like, make a point in, you know, in my stand-up or anything I write of, you know, I never punch down. So it's like I'm usually punching at myself. I'm usually saying I know nothing about this.
You punch at yourself way more than anyone else ever could.
Yeah. So it's like it's, you know, there's something very strange about the stand-up experience and how it's, you know, it's really a conversation with an audience.
It is a conversation with an audience. It's a relationship with an audience. You're forming a relationship with an audience each time.
Yeah.
But I also think that, you know, especially – what's not being taken into account in Craft Beer Gate is that, you know, part of your stand-up persona is look how unsophisticated I am.
Yes.
And so so the other side of that is like, maybe I don't get craft beers because I'm not sophisticated and I don't have a sophisticated palate.
Which is similar to fine dining.
Right.
You know, the reality is like, I feel insecure that I'm in the end would prefer a steak or a burger.
Right.
I wish that I wanted some, you know, grass seed, you know, something or other. I'm questioning it, you know. I mean, we also live in an age where I think the consumption of beef is being looked at. You know, like in the future, my children, half of them will undoubtedly be vegetarians.
Right.
I just think it's just a sense of logic.
I think you need to double down on the craft beer thing. I think next week you need to go on and just guns a-blazing.
I already did that because I had a tooth fairy thing. Believe it or not, it sounds even – I did a tooth fairy commentary and then I went back on the week later because there was such outrage. But, you know, that being said, all of this, I love having friends with different opinions. It's also scary because I think that in this tribalism, but like, I don't necessarily agree with them on things, but I think it's important that you have that friend.
Yes.
That has the, you know, like we don't seek orthodoxy in all our beliefs.
And we shouldn't just live in an echo chamber.
Right.
That's basically a cul-de-sac. You're living in a cul-de-sac.
Right.
And it's good, like learning to communicate with people who think different things, just sort of makes you a little more flexible for the world and understand how to be in a community. But again, I think the internet, not just social media, but the internet is conditioned us because of, you know, Amazon algorithms or iTunes algorithms or whatever, that you're only going to – that it's like you either 0% like something or 100% like it. And anything in between is like your fucking enemy. And it's like, no. It's okay to – you know, like you don't have to 100% love everything. I mean, I just think – you know, it's like when our parents were growing up, there was definitely tribalism, but it did seem like people could have conversations without immediately like, fuck you fucking piece of shit, you fucking piece of shit. You know, it's like, we're in fuck you fucking piece of shit territory. And it's like, hey, you know, what if people had conversations and listened, and they don't have to agree, but they also don't have to dehumanize each other.
Well, let me ask you this.
Sure.
Let me ask you this, because this is something that I think is really interesting.
Okay.
The notion of, I think what Billy Eichner did for the midterms, very important.
That was Jim just unbuttoning his pants.
That was me taking off my pants.
After all.
That was my head gets fatter as we talk, so I got loose in it. But I think, you know, as somebody, you know, I wonder about like inserting ourselves, like, you know, like I did a joke on Twitter the day before the election where I said, I wish somebody would tell me to vote, you know, because obviously everyone's Twitter feed was all about voting.
Yeah.
And the thing is like, you know, it was funny, but it was like, obviously it's important for people to vote. But I feel like my responsibility is to not just tell people to vote, but to indirectly kind of serve as a creative, you know, antidote to like
the instruction.
Well,
you're using the tools that you have.
Right.
Like to sort of like that as a comic. Sometimes comics say the opposite of what they believe.
But sometimes the opposite is more instructive.
I know you voted to try to keep craft beers out of America.
I did. I voted against craft beers.
You just wrote it in.
Get sent so many free beer.
Did you really?
I got sent so much free beer.
Well, you haven't had butterfly wing ale.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. And it's, you know, it's all good.
But that's also because you've been doing comedy long enough that for the majority of your career, that like it just stayed in the venue that you were in.
Yes.
And now, you know, like now answering to the larger population, we're oh my gosh, no, I don't really hate craft beers. I don't really, you know, it's like having to do that is sort of another part of the job.
It's interesting. And there is something also about, and it's important that people have opinions and that they express them, but it is also realizing that those negative opinions, and I'm also not used to getting negative opinions because everyone likes me because I'm nice. I'm a good guy. I help puppies. No, but like, and I go on stage to make strangers laugh because I'm wildly insecure. No, but like, realizing that some of those negative comments are, they should be instructive, but they should also be put in the context of the whole group. Do you know what I mean?
And also, just to sort of look at it from another point of view, just from the compassionate side, the people who are screaming, like, you don't know what they're going through either. Like,
no,
you don't know.
That's true.
Like, did something terrible happen in their family or their lives? Was like, did craft beer save them from a life of crime or whatever? And so I think it's just being able to take a step back and everyone just acknowledging, like, hey, I'm not.
Yeah, and
I'm not trying to harsh your world, and you know you don't have to.
People being in a moment, having a moment of anger or outrage. There might be other factors. Do you know what I mean? It's like
you don't know. And why has someone not made Jim Gaffigan Beyond the Pale Ale? I don't know.
Oh, somebody asked.
Okay, why is it? There you go.
And it's very good. It's very good. Of course I'm going to like it. It is interesting. I don't know. We figured it all out.
Chris. That's all we are here to do is just figure it out. We figured out the internet. We figured out craft beer. How many kids do you have now? Are you having more kids?
Five kids. Well, you know, I'm sure, you know, my wife would love to have more kids and I'd be open to it. But it's like she did almost die of a brain tumor.
How's she doing?
She's doing great. I mean, you know, it's like she's at 80%, which is a normal human's 130%. So she's doing great. But like, you know, the whole thing of like kids, I think she would, you know, but I'm like, you almost left me with five. You almost left this disaster of a human with five children to ruin. can we think this through? But I don't know, you know, because I'm also, you know, I'm not like 100, but, you know, I'm feeling it. You know what I mean? I mean, I love the age I am, but it's like, I don't have the energy that I used to have. Like, you know, when I see like Alec Baldwin has like four kids and he's like 60, I'm like, that's insane.
And getting in street fights.
Yeah. By the way, you know, here's my commentary on the street fight thing is that when I moved to New York 30 years ago, you would rarely walk down the street and not see someone crying, someone yelling at someone, or someone just cursing and muttering to themselves.
Right.
And not, I'm not talking about homeless, mentally ill people. There, you know, like, so I'm not excusing his behavior, but in New York City, there used to be, and by the way, along with our topic, I can't believe I'm defending him punching someone. I don't even know what happened. But the thing is like, imagine what Alec Baldwin encounters from people on the other side. Like, first of all, he is, a type A guy, which I'm not, and I don't think you are either. But, like, he's also encountering people. Like, if you are a Trump guy and you dislike anyone who dislikes Trump, you're going to dislike Alec Baldwin first and foremost.
Right.
And so we don't know what the exchange, I'm not justifying the behavior, but it's just, I just bring that up, that like 30 years ago, that was nothing. We didn't live in a social media age.
Right, right, right.
And also, he is, you know, it's so, you know, he was always a loose cannon. And, but like, there is kind of like, and I guess I'm kind of like this moody, curmudgeon-y guy. And I just, I'm like, can people, I'm not talking about physical violence, but can people sometimes, people can be angry, can't they?
Right.
Do you know what I mean? And people can have disagreements. And, you know, obviously he shouldn't have punched him if he even did. But, like, there's arguments. You know what I mean? I just, you know, that happens. It's weird, like, even looking at Twitter, where I get most of my news, it's like we can identify the articles or the topics that are silly. And, like, I remember there was this thing on Twitter about Ariana Grande's high ponytail and Camila Cabello having a high ponytail. I swear to God, the issue was the pain that it caused them, mm-hmm. having a high ponytail. Look, I don't even have hair up there. So it's like, I, you know, and I'm not dismissing the fact that like these singers might experience sure. pain with, but like, I look at that and I go, oh, that is for people that are fans of those singers.
Right.
But like some of the other stuff, it's, I don't think it's a malicious thing. I think that, like, I don't think that, like, it's like, here, let's get upset about this. I don't think it's malicious, but I do think that it is, you will have an emotional react. Like, we're addicted to emotion.
You know that a certain percentage of people will react to the high ponytail story the same way that other people would react to a human rights violation issue.
Right.
They're like, you know, I'm not sure. And that's it. Everything has the same level of fever pitch.
Wow.
But not everything, yeah. you know, like, but there is nuance in things, and maybe that's not, but you know, whatever. If you want to get upset about the high ponytail, then by all means get upset about the high ponytail.
Or you want to express empathy for your favorite singer.
Right.
Or you have a high ponytail, or, you know what I mean? It's like,
but does all this, but I'm so curious, if didn't...
Is it constructive?
Well, and having gone through what you and Jeannie went through, did you come out of that and go, God, I just don't know if any of this shit matters, you know? Like when you're faced with one of the most serious medical...
it really doesn't matter.
...situations, does any, you know, does people getting upset about craft beer or high ponytail, like... Yes, yeah, so what? Like, my wife almost died. Like, none of this matters.
Well, there's, I think that it's a sliding thing where there's, intellectually, you can understand that obviously it's unimportant, but if you're tired, if you're exhausted.
Don't read it right before bed. It's the worst time.
Do you know what I mean? If you're, you know, like, if you've just dealt with... moments of humiliation in the entertainment industry. Like, people don't realize there's these behind-the-scenes slights that occur that can kind of destroy, you know, you get calluses, but, like, you know, that can kind of destabilize you emotionally. So then you get hit by something, and it's intellectually stupid, but emotionally you're like, fuck you!
Do you remember what the first dumb thing you got upset about was after everything happened? Was it where you're like, you know what? My life is different now. I have this whole new perspective. And you're like,
oh, gosh.
God damn it. Who put mayonnaise?
No, yeah. It's so silly. I don't know what it was, but it's like, look, yeah. It's also, you know, not to get, I mean, I'm always like, if I'm not in touch with gratitude or like being humble that there is, you know, that I'm not, if I'm not intellectually in touch with the idea that I'm not in charge of anything,
mm-hmm.
then I get angry.
Right.
I'm like, but I should control the traffic. I have to go and do a podcast with Chris
Hardwick.
Don't
these people know?
Do you know what I mean? It's like, how dare them deliver Fresh Direct now? Do you know what I mean? It's just like...
Well, they put this down to three lanes instead of four because they had to put an inflatable rat in front of this building.
Yes.
That pissed someone off.
Right. And so... it is, you know, it's like what I'm getting to is I should probably meditate. That's what I probably should do.
Meditation's great. I do it. It's great. But did you talk publicly about any of the medical stuff? Have you talked?
Oh, yeah. No, I did, you know, this special Beyond the Pale Beyond the Pale. That was the first special. It's like, I don't even know what I'm talking about. It's like, no, Noble Ape. It's pretty much everywhere you can rent or buy. But like, it's, they're having a screening on Comedy Central at some point. But it was like, that whole special dealt with, probably like 20 minutes of it was about this experience that my wife and I went through, which was, it's interesting because you get these assignments as a comedian. You know, we talk about our lives and all this. And so the brain tumor, it's like I spent a couple weeks in a hospital. So you just, you kind of live in this world and you're like, all right, well, this is weird. So from our point of view, even the lighting in hospitals, you're like, so all right, I'm going to write some jokes on writing it. You know, obviously, when I knew my wife was going to survive.
Yeah, but it's also, that's what you guys do together.
Yes.
And that's normal for you.
Yes.
And it's important, it's in those moments of stress and tragedy and trauma to try to find things that ground you. And that's part of your normal routine.
I think people, you know, that's the kind of, I think people don't realize that comedians are, it's fun to perform. And it's fun to come up with material, like a new joke. People are like, oh, thank you for doing this benefit show. You're like, I would have done the show anyway.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, you know what I mean? I'm getting a lot out of it, but like, it's also cathartic. And it was fun to tour around with the Noble Ape material and see how, I think human beings, we all deal with these medical crises, whether it's with a parent or a sibling or a loved one. And we can't live in that drama constantly, but the remnants of the memories live with us. So when I'm talking about mine, they're like, that's right, I spent 2 weeks in a hospital.
And I think that's really good for people in the sense that it's healing for them.
Yes.
Because, you know, when I talked about my dad dying, I would have people afterwards that go, hey, I'm in Dead Dad Club too, and it made me feel better just to hear someone say it out, talk about it out loud. Because most, you know, these are not things that they don't teach you really how to deal with this stuff in school. No one sets you aside and goes,
no.
Okay, you're going to experience tragedy in your life and weird things, and here's how you deal with that. And so for someone to be able to spin it in a way that has some humor behind it, you know, even if it gets a little dark, is it's cathartic for them because they go, oh my God, I'm not alone. I've had weird thoughts. This was strange for me.
Yeah.
It's, again, it goes back to the communal idea, you know?
Yes, yes. And, you know, that was one of the things when Jeannie discovered some of this stuff. Obviously, I also did it. But it's like you immediately go to the internet, brain tumor, who's had that, you know, and you're looking for people surviving. And so you're looking for someone talking about, you know, like anesthesia. You're looking for these things so that it feels communal.
Yeah.
So that you're not like this first-time explorer. Because, by the way, usually when the game's over, there's no examples of it working.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so it's like that communal kind of experience. But it is fascinating because I'm glad we're talking about it because I feel as though you know, you can lose touch with things that you should have gratitude for. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I'm a very, I love working and I love creating stand-up and acting and stuff like that. But big picture stuff, you know, in the end, when you're, you know, about to kick it, who's at that bed with you?
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Those are the only people. There's not going to be someone from Entertainment Tonight going, da-da-da-da-da, you did 6 specials. You know what I mean?
No, you know what? It's so interesting that you're saying that because I went to a funeral a few weeks back of an actor who was a pal of mine and a great guy. And he was 76 and it was Scott Wilson who was he was on Walking Dead and just has this amazing career.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was at the sort of celebration of his life, they showed a bunch of his clips and you go, oh my God, he was such an amazing actor. And yes, that is part of the legacy of what someone leaves behind.
Yeah.
But just to have this really human moment of seeing all these wonderful people speaking, you know, like there were tears and there were laughs and there was happiness and how much he had affected these people's lives and what great people they were.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's the sort of, you know, like his legacy besides his work, the more important one is how positively he touched all these people's lives and how there's just like this emotional genetics that is passed down. Like he passed goodness on to them,
yeah.
And to honor him, they will in turn pass that goodness. You go, that is what a person's life is. It's like,
yeah.
And he, you know, and in that he, to some degree will remain, you know, like he lives on. And that, those are the kind of things that I think I didn't understand in my 20s. And if you're in your 20s and you understand that now, you're far greater than what I was like, but just sort of appreciating and understanding that now and going, oh my God, it really is about your contribution to the world,
yeah.
and not having everything be about you and the people that you're around and designing the, you know, the type of life that you should.
It's aftertaste.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because of course it's always about food with me, but it is. And by the way, I always, you know, I talk, and some of this is just sheer luck, but you know, two comedians talking about this is that when people talk about comedy, it's not just about the joke and about the laughter, it's about the aftertaste. We all have those friends that are really funny, really bitchy, really cutting, you know, like just so funny, but afterwards there might be a fatigue. Kind of like you might feel uneasy. You might feel like, oh, you know, and some of that's what I mean by aftertaste. Like, does that hold up? And that's how, like, people's, you know, personalities hold up. And you see it in all walks of life. It's like Abraham Lincoln, his aftertaste is incredible. You know, it's like, and he was imperfect. But some of it is, you know, but, you know, like as a comedian, it's just kind of like, does your comedy on hindsight, you know, even the beer people, are they going to look back and go, all right, you know, he was joking.
Right.
Or are they going to look back and go, no, you know what? He just was being a dick.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And so it's like, it ties back to that, you know, that whole, that quote, you know, it's people won't remember what you did. They'll remember how you made them feel.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes. And I being aware of that, I think is important because we do make choices. We make, you know, every day we make choices. We make choices that we're not aware of. And so, you know, if all of a sudden tomorrow it was all over or the world blew up or whatever, I mean,
yeah.
Could you say?
I mean, I would live, but go on.
Could you say that, you know, you made choices that you were proud of, or that what you were leaving behind is something that, and not just like, I don't mean materially what you're leaving behind, yeah. But sort of philosophically and spiritually what you're leaving behind is that. Would you be satisfied with that?
Probably not.
Especially for performers who spend a lot of time basically just feeding our own egos. But I do think that, you know, comedy really is, it does have that. And I think that, and I always say, like, you know, why don't great comedy films get nominated for like a really good comedy? Is very hard to do, to make people to laugh, but still make people feel accepted and a part of something and feel emotions, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen Groundhog Day in a long time.
I watch it every year.
But it is one of those, why does that hold up? I mean, Harold Ramis, right? It's like, but there was, it's, you know, the aftertaste. You look back at some, I mean, I just talk about this all the time with Ted Alexander, who opens... And we tore around. But, like, you look at some stuff that was funny 20 years ago, and it's not funny now.
No.
And sometimes it might not be funny because the cultural shift shifted, but it might not be funny because it's just mean.
Right. Well, yeah. And it's the there's meanness when you look back, because when you think about, like, in your life, little kids – are pretty mean. Little kids can be pretty mean.
Oh, yeah.
And when you start to get older, you go, oh, okay, well, it's bad to do that. So you have to evolve and you have to learn and you have to grow. And when you look back at earlier comedy or older comedy, it's like, oh, we were more infant then. And now we know, we understand humanity a lot better. You know, that is the good part about social media, is that it is shown a light on humanity and sections of humanity that didn't have the opportunity to be elevated before. But so some comedy is either mean or it's too of the moment. But Groundhog Day is one of those films where it's just such a human story.
Yeah.
And it's the jokes are timeless and the performances are flawless. And it is. It's about – it's, you know, in any good movie, a character is going to go through a change. And the journey for how that happens with him. And I've been to all these nerd sites to figure out, like, because they calculate – like, people have calculated how long he was in the loop. And some people say, like, 10,000 days. Some people say 10,000 years. But when you think about, you know, it's like, how much leverage does a person need against themselves to really change and become a better person? There's a really great message to extrapolate from that.
Yeah.
And hopefully we don't have to go through horrible things like losing someone or someone having a brain tumor or a terrible thing, to just go, hey, maybe we should just appreciate the world as it is, like appreciate people and, you know, be cool and contribute and all that stuff.
Yeah.
What do you, are you performing, are you one of those comedians that has to perform every night or you don't feel human, right?
And I also, I'm on this, I need to be producing because I think because of my wife's sickness that there is a clock, you know, that, you know, my brother had a stroke and I'm just kind of like, there's a clock where I'm not going to be able to do this, you know? So like when my wife was sick and she had pneumonia after the surgery, I was like, okay, looks like I'm retiring. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like that was not like some grand dramatic, melodramatic statement. It was just a practical thing. I'm not going to be touring doing stand-up when I have five young children at home. And you know, before that, seeing my brother who had a stroke, who is a very funny guy, who just moves a little slower,
mm-hmm.
It's just like, oh, yeah. You know, like this is a fragile time. Like, you know, seeing those kind of situations made me realize if you want to do it, you know, it made me have a greater appreciation for doing it. But like, and again, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter. But I am, in the end, this workhorse of like, I love, you know, coming up with a new joke. It's not a lot better than that. You know, I mean, maybe a cheeseburger, but you know.
Writing a joke about a cheeseburger.
But you know what I mean? So it's, you know, you go through these different levels of creative fulfillment, but in the end, you're just doing it, you know, it feels good.
Well, what about Jeannie? What did she, like, how is she, you said she's 80%, but how's she doing? And what did she, you know, like to the best of your knowledge, to your understanding, what did she extrapolate from the whole thing? And, you know, is she writing with you still?
She's, you know, we're doing some writing, but like she, you know, she's writing a book about the experience, but she definitely had this bargain with God, kind of like, get me through, like, I want to raise my children. And then also, so, you know, like, she, I've read the proposal for her book. It's amazing. And, but it's very much kind of like, my children will not be douchebags, as corny as that sounds. And so she's starting this youth group thing, you know, that is pretty incredible. You know, like she's, you know, she doesn't have time to do any of this stuff.
Right.
So it's pretty amazing how these, you know, it's like she's at 80% of what she was and she's doing more.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? And so
that's pretty inspiring.
It's pretty inspiring. Yeah, so it's pretty impressive, but it's like also, you know, it's like as a partner, I'm kind of trying to sit there and go, we got to go to bed now.
Right, right, right.
Do you know what I mean?
You don't have to write a book tonight.
Yes. You know, it's just, and we're not the type of people to outsource it. She's not interested in just talking into a,
right,
talking to somebody to ghostwrite it.
So. Right. And the kids are doing well?
They're doing well. They're doing well. It's chaos, right?
What's the age range between?
Right now, 6 to 14.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That is a turbulent.
Yeah.
That, like, that's, that, wow. Wow.
It's crazy. And so, you know, as a family, you sit there and you see, like, I never thought that, I didn't expect this would be, that we would be this family, but we are the family that travels. So, you know, I construct around school breaks doing shows somewhere. Or like, you know, at Thanksgiving, I'm doing a show in Athens, Greece. You know, it's just like, instead of having a summer house or having...
We have a summer tour bus.
But it's usually interesting places, whether it be Australia or New Zealand. So hopefully that works, because I think Americans, we have to kind of like go other places to realize who we are.
It's important. It's important to not just read about places if you can go places and see other cultures. But again, that's the idea of getting out and immersion and understanding and seeing like that's necessary to evolve.
Yes.
So that we don't get lulled into that shitty like us and them kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's like we're all us, you know? It's like them is sort of them might be another planet that comes to basically just squeeze our planet like a sponge for all of its resources, but we should be in us.
I mean, I feel like there's all this never ending trickle of like they found water on Mars, and then they're like, you know what, the soil on Mars, they could grow things. It's like we're eventually going to find out. We found these aliens living under the ground. You know, it's just this trickle of kind
they were
of
there
like
the whole time.
Do you know what I mean? It's just like we just couldn't see them.
You know what's going to happen? Burning Man on Mars.
Burning Man on Mars, right?
I mean, literal Burning Man when you jump out into the environment. But once they get that under control, then then Mars will be a site of some type of interplanetary Burning Man, 100%. I feel like you should go. You know who goes to Burning Man, or at least they did before they – well, maybe they'll go again. Is Natasha and Moshe go to Burning Man.
I think I saw them on Instagram there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think they bring their baby.
Oh, they do bring the baby to Burning Man.
I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know if we had a babysitter who went.
You should just go one time. I feel like just one time.
There's a lot of things I want to do, but it's like the balance of I don't want to be gone. You know, like I always say this. People are like, "Can you come and do this benefit show?" I'm like, if I'm leaving my wife with five children,
right?
I have to be doing something where I'm making money to pay for the five kids. Do you know what I mean? I can't. I have to, like, you know, that's where it's like every trip is kind of like my wife and I, we don't really go on kind of like, let's get away from the kids. Because I travel, we're always bringing our kids.
Right. So. Yeah. You can't, you certainly don't want to be off in Burning Man and your wife's like, two of the kids are sick and I don't feel great. And you're like, I'm sorry, I can't talk. Reception's bad. And I just shit in a cactus. Like,
right.
You want to be able to.
Do you know what I mean? I'm walking through an ice house in the desert.
My wife and I are going to go in an igloo somewhere where you can see the northern lights.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, just go to like Norway or something or.
Yeah. And then like even the, everything's out of ice, right? The glass.
Yep. The blankets.
The blankets. But it's like, I guess, why not, right?
I mean, just to say that, I guess it's just for the experience.
Well, it's like eventually, probably in our lifetime, people will just go to space to say that they went to space, right?
Yeah, because, you know, maybe there won't be any ice left.
Right. Because they have to go up there to live there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I imagine you're already probably writing the next special.
Yes.
When are you shooting that, and when are the next dates?
You know, it's never.
How do you know when you're ready? Do you pick the date and then go, I'm just going to hit that target? Or do you get to a certain point where you tell our manager, Alex, all right, I'm ready. Let's kind of do the final run to shoot the thing.
Well, some of it is I never want to do a show in a town or a city where it's not 50 minutes of new material.
Right.
So that keeps the machine going. And but some of it is the special. It's like, and then like working in international shows, you know, so I'm doing this show in Athens. It'll probably be like 600 people.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I'm doing an Asian tour next March, you know, where it's like, you know, I don't know how many tickets I'm going to sell in Seoul,
right?
You know, but I want to go to Seoul.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so like some of it is disrupting the whole typical touring thing. Because I would, and then I do movies. So it's like, to answer your question, it's like, I don't know. I'm thinking March, but in the end, a special has to be special.
That's right. So. That's what people forget. And sort of in the, and I think it's good for comedy that there's a new hour special that's on television every week now. It's good because it reminds people that comedy is a thing. But it also, in a way, is like, oh, but, you know, it's special. You know, it's like, it's...
See, but that's, it's, you know, like when I started stand-up, there was definitely this, you know, you look back, you know, it's a Jewish American art form, right? So you look back and, like, there was Mark Twain, then it was, like, vaudeville and all this stuff. And, you know, Ziegfeld Follies and all this stuff. But, like, there was this thing of... You develop 15 minutes and you do that for the rest of your life.
Right.
And then you develop an hour and you do that for the rest of your life. And, but now in this day and age, it's ongoing. So I think that like the traditional notion of a special, it is true that it is, you know, only special if it's special. And so some of it is seeking creative fulfillment.
Do you ever get to a point where you're like, yeah, maybe I'm just out of jokes? Or do you have enough faith in the process?
Well, there's definitely moments where I, you know, when I was done with Cinco, I was like, that might be it. and then luckily my wife had a brain tumor. No, but... but... No, there's different...
She would have laughed at that, folks.
Yeah, she would have laughed.
She would have laughed at
but
that.
But there's different... you know, some of it is you gain these tools, and you know, it's like... You know, like, I'm sure when you were, you know, doing Talking Dead, and then you did, you know, the AMC was like, can you do it for this?
Yeah.
And you were like, well, it's kind of designed for this, but yeah, I guess...
Right.
It's like the skill set... moves to different topics.
Sure.
And obviously it evolves, you know, like, and as comedians, we put assignments on ourselves. Like, I'm going to tell stories. I'm going to, you know, there's a moment where you're like, I'm going to challenge my audience. I'm going to bring, you know, like even in different specials, I'm like, all right, you know, I'm going to make or attempt to make cancer funny, or I'm going to attempt to make this funny.
Well, sometimes comics will do stuff before shows or go, work the word avocado into your set.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, those are the fun kind of low stakes, you know.
Well, some of it is the environment, or if you're in a city. That's what's so great about international shows is, so I'm in Athens or I'm in, you know, Bangkok. I got to come up with some material, you know, even if they're all expats in the audience. That's... We're in our environment, whether it be Bangkok or Hong Kong.
Well, your
or whatever.
Comedy machine is like so in place that it's sort of like a hay baler in a way. You can throw a bunch of stuff in and you know that like something's going to come out.
Hopefully.
Because you've been doing it for so long. So coming in 2019, Jim Gaffigan on Ice,
on ice.
I do believe is a good name for a comedy special.
That is a good name.
And you could come out at the beginning and just say, are you guys disappointed? It's just a stage. And then you do your 10 minutes on the On Ice shows.
That's so funny.
I mean...
It's a good idea.
I'm telling you.
I think you should use it. Because it's your idea.
I don't know if it fits my... I don't know if it fits my comedy character. Chris Hardwick on Ice. Then I'm going to be like, isn't it dumb when... Isn't it crazy when people do shows on ice? And then the ice show community is going to be like, you piece of shit.
How dare you?
How dare you take away our livelihoods? This ice is our earth.
This ice is everything. And then even hockey people
and it's
people
all
will
melting
like,
away.
Then all ice communities will get... And then even, like, the Border Patrol agents, ICE, will be like, you're anti-ICE.
And then Ice Cube, Ice
and
Team,
then
Vanilla
ISIS,
Ice.
ISIS will even
all
be...
All of them...
You don't want to offend ISIS.
No, you don't want to... They're not a great audience.
And then people are like, oh, he only likes warm drinks.
Yeah, that's right.
You know?
That's right. Then that's a whole other thing. So then you're upsetting the refrigeration community.
And then you can use the term kerfuffle.
Finally, I caused a kerfuffle. I wish, rather than seeing the word outrage in the news all the time, really funny, Jim Gaffigan creates kerfuffle in
the community. They never use kerfuffle in headlines. No. Because I guess people are like, that's just not even
But now they should, because the word outrage is used so much that it just disappears.
They should use kerfuffle.
Someone needs to pioneer kerfuffle.
Kerfuffle, yeah. Right? Jim Gaffigan, kerfuffle.
The president
that would be a good name for a special kerfuffle.
Kerfuffle is a great title. That's right. A great title for a special. All right, good. You have we've got some assignments. I really appreciate that you came into the podcast. I adore you, and you know, obviously, just such a huge fan of your work as well as being your pal. So you know, are you performing tonight?
I don't know as of yet. Hopefully. I think I have a parent-teacher.
Oh,
there's always school stuff.
So you, but you'll just drop in if you have time to go somewhere.
Hopefully. If there's a show that, you know, I mean, I'm not thrilled about bumping people. And so, like, there's certain situations where it's not a big deal if I bump, but if it's a scheduled show for a festival, I don't want to go in there.
It creates a kerfuffle.
It creates a kerfuffle.
You don't want to do that.
Kerfuffle on ice.
All right, Jim Gaffigan, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Enjoy your kerfuffle.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You've just listened to the Jim Gaffigan episode of the ID10T podcast number 983. It is time for Ending Word Salad. Until I can come up with a less clunky name, Ending Word Salad. EWS. EWS. I don't know if I like that. But, you know, from time to time, I might feel inspired to prattle on long after you thought you were done. But, you know, something that we talk a lot about in the podcast with Gaffigan is reactivity, being reactive. And it's so easy to be reactive. And it feels like so much of our digital lives are basically just a direct line from our emotional brain right to the internet. And maybe it's not, maybe it has nothing to do with the internet too. We can certainly be reactive in life. Someone cuts you off in traffic, someone cuts you off in line, something happens out in the real world, you know, someone screws you over at work or something, like, you know, you want to immediately be reactive. You immediately want to, you know, jump down someone's throat, either in real life or on the internet. But the thing is, reactivity really is a choice. I think it's a choice. A lot of people think it's a choice. If you've ever heard of Viktor Frankl, he was an Austrian neurologist and psychiatrist and a Holocaust survivor and just an incredible thinker. And a lot of motivational stuff will probably refer you to his book, Man's Search for Meaning. And he has a really amazing quote. Well, he has a lot of really amazing quotes, but there's one sort of fundamental idea, and it sort of revolves around, you know, how we can choose how we react to things, how we can't control, like we've heard this a lot on the podcast, you can't control the external world, you can choose how you react to things. And there's a very, very simple quote that is beautiful, which is, between stimulus and response, there is space. In that space is our power to choose our response. Isn't that just beautiful and simplistic? We never think about space. We just think about something happening and bam, we react. It's like reflexive. But it doesn't have to be reflexive. It doesn't have to be, you know, your emotions don't have to be like getting tapped on the knee with a rubber mallet when you're getting a physical and your knee just jerking. You don't have to be knee jerky. All right, you do have the power. Obviously, again, horrible things happen in life sometimes, and people, you're going to be human. You're going to have human moments, you know. But in as much as you can, why not try to cut back on the number of those moments? Because when you start to choose how you respond to stuff, then you really do feel more empowered, you know, when you feel that space, when you feel that distance between yourself and your reactive self, like, you know. There's a sort of an extension of this idea. There's another quote, which
I've been trying to find the source of. A lot of people have said it. And I can't really, I think it's also been falsely attributed to Buddha. I know that Murakami has said it. I know a lot, it's just, it's a quote a lot of people have said. But the gist of it is, pain is inevitable, suffering is optional. Isn't that a crazy idea in a good way? I just wanted to offer the options. The options that are available to you as you traverse this sort of this weird matrix of life that we all experience together, and let you feel like you're maybe a little more in control of things than you think you are. Again, you can't control events. You can't control what happens to you in traffic, but you can control how you respond to what happens to you in traffic and how long you're going to make yourself suffer about what happens to you in traffic. So just go with the flow of traffic. move with life, you know, move with it. You can't move against it for too long. It's just going to create discomfort. So try to learn from this stuff, you know, and you'll be okay. You can do this. I believe in you. I believe that if you at least shave down a percentage of your automatic reactivity, just a percentage of it, you don't even have to change all of it, but just a percentage of it, you will already be way better off. The sort of butterfly effect of that rippling through the other corners of your life, I think, will be dramatic, that you will feel over time. So that's it. Thank you for listening to Ending Word Salad. I appreciate you. And I hope you have a wonderful day, night, evening, middle of the night, whenever it is that you're listening to this. That's been Ending Word Salad. I will talk at you next week.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law & Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.